This is Mame Warren. Today is the 3rd of December, 1996. I'm in Richmond, Virginia, with Dr. John Newton Thomas. And my first question to you is, how did you decide to go to Washington and Lee in the first place?
I didn't decide. It was decided, I think, by my mother. It never occurred to me to think about what institution I'd go to. In those days, I don't think we young people had quite the freedom that's granted today. And I'm very pleased that we didn't have it. My uncle, Charles Graves, taught law at Washington and Lee, and then for some reason went and taught law at the University of Virginia. But he and my mother were very close, and I suspect that it was his influence that led mother to suggest that I go to Washington and leave. But I remember now vividly, I was driving from Bedford, where I lived and my mother was, over to Lexington one day, mother and I, and I can see us now coming into the campus down from the street down below, what street that is. And when we got there, looking up the hill, and that we walked around in front of the chapel and then walked up to the main building, to the Washington College, and just looked around. I didn't exactly know why we were doing it, but that was my first contact with Washington and Lee. I didn't know then that I'd be going to Washington and Lee. I think mother had this idea that I went over there and saw it, then I would want to go there, and she was certainly right about that. So that was my first contact, and many a time during my student period, I think back on the day that mother and I first walked up that campus. I'll say this, that it had not occurred to me to go anywhere else. I hadn't really given it a thought. When I look back on what I will now call the good old days, we kids were not making major decisions about where we'd go to college and that type of thing. And I trusted my parents to treat me right. And the time came, and I came to Washington and Lee, but I will say this, that when I graduated from Bedford High School, they invited Dr. Henry Lewis Smith. Is that a familiar name?
Yes, sir, it is.
Dr. Henry Lewis Smith to deliver the graduation address. And my parents entertained him in our home. While he was there, and if I may say this without seeming to brag, I had the honor of giving the valedictory for our class. What do you call it?
Being the valedictorian?
Yeah, the valedictorian.
Uh-huh.
For our class. We didn't have but 11 persons in it. So unless I could prove that they're all very distinguished, I would say that my being in fact a valedictorian was a modest honor.
Well, tell me about Henry Louis Smith. What kind of person was he?
I thought he was the greatest person in the world. He, had been president of Davidson College, and he came to Washington to lead, and insofar as I was able at that time to make a judgment of any value, I just thought he was about the greatest person that ever came down the road. And during my college days, I was in the Smith's home from time to time for dinner and so on. His son, Raymond Smith, was a member of the Beta Theta Pi fraternity, and I never heard of fraternities before I went to Washington and Lee, but I was given a bid to Beta Theta Pi, what Dukie Smith, as we called him, belonged to, and of course I thought that was the best fraternity in the country, and have you ever heard of Miss Annie Jo White?
Tell me about Miss Annie Jo White.
Well, Miss Annie Jo White, I can't tell you all her background, but she had a house, owned a house on the campus, down on, what's the street right south of our campus?
Main Street.
Main Street. And that house is still there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There is there's another professor's house next to it where the Channels live. But the Beta fraternity lived in Miss Annie's house.
Beta fraternity was in Miss Annie Jo's house?
We didn't all live there.
Uh-huh.
But that was our place of gathering.
Really?
And Miss Annie had an interest in some of us. I remember that she was interested in I can't remember names anymore.
That's okay.
She was interested in Eddie Crockett from Lithville, Virginia, who was a Beta. And Miss Annie was the one who chose the leader for the fancy dress ball. As a matter of fact, she may have inaugurated, as far as I know.
She did indeed.
And the first year I was there, Ed Camel from Worcester was the led fancy dress ball.
Ed Campbell?
Ed Crockett.
Ed Crockett.
Yes. Ed Crockett. And you may have heard about Miss Adams. She had some rather decided characteristics, but using her house the way we did, we were very happy there, and we didn't, as far as I know, we ever had any trouble with her. And
what was she like? Tell me about her.
Oh my goodness. I don't dare to try to tell you about her. She had pretty positive ideas, I think, and she had leadership because she undertook a good many things, and people on the campus knew her as Miss Annie Jo.
Was she still the librarian when you were there?
I don't recall that she was. I don't think, I'm certain she wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wouldn't like to state that for history.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember her at fancy dress? Did she still go to the balls?
Oh yeah, she ran it.
Did you get involved in that?
No, I didn't. But I could have if I'd wanted to. The fancy dress was a real institution when she was there, and I think it was primarily due to Miss Annie. Well.
Did you used to go to fancy dress?
No, I didn't.
You never went?
Never went.
Oh, no. I was hoping you could describe it to me.
Well, I have to tell you that my strict Presbyterian family didn't encourage dancing. My sister danced and my brother went to dance, but I never, at that time, I never learned to dance. So I didn't bother about fancy dress. Not being able to go to fancy dress didn't interfere with my enjoyment of university and so on. I was quite an enthusiastic beta in my beta fraternity.
Tell me what you mean by that. What does it mean to be an enthusiastic beta?
Well, let me see. I'm trying to think of a beta song. And they all fill the cups and cry, fill the face of pie. Pass the loving cup around, no pass a brother by. We all the loving cup and make a fate of pie. Our trip grows strong, bold comes our song, when this fair cup we raise. So pass the loving cup around, and drink in Baker's praise.
Very good. I'm impressed. That's wonderful. Well, now you just brought something up I'm curious about. Pass the loving cup around and drink in Baker's praise. Now, you were there during Prohibition time, weren't you?
Oh, yes.
How did that have an effect?
Well, that was just the song. The loving cup. We had a lot of songs, and that was one of them.
Uh-huh.
But there was some waiters there who were put in strict background and weren't drinking. The loving cup, of course, referred to just to a particular meeting when you passed the cup around, and I suppose it was alcoholic. I think in those days it wasn't necessarily alcoholic.
Was there a sense of it being Prohibition time? Did you ever see anything like bathtub gin and that kind of thing going on?
No. No. When did Prohibition...
Wasn't it in the 20s?
Well, as far as I know, it was. Now, I'll tell you this about me. My mother told me when I was a boy that if I went until I was 21 years of age without taking a drink, she'd give me $100. Well, now, $100, I've asked them, my financial friend, I said, Well, it was $100 in 24. How much would that be today? And they say about $1,000. So I got $100 for going until I was 21 without drinking. Or of course, Mother's theory was that if I got that far without it, I wouldn't do it. I never had any real temptation to drink. I don't know why. There was, of course, there was a fair amount of drinking at Washington, but I don't remember students being drunk. I don't think I ever saw one drunk. Well,
so you didn't have any sense of during Prohibition that was any kind of an issue? Yes.
I feel very inhospitable.
Oh, not at all.
Not bringing you all coffee and cookies and attending to you properly, but I've just got to go out for a little bit.
Okay, I hope
and
I see you.
Dr. Thomas, you think you can take care of this pretty lady while I'm gone? I won't be gone long. But,
I think I can.
You think you can?
He's doing a good job already.
You take care of him.
He's doing a good job already.
Is he doing all right?
He's doing great.
Well, there he's on. He's got a lot of interesting things stored in here if he can just bring them up.
If I could remember them.
He's doing it.
Well,
all right.
I certainly hope I'll get back before you leave.
I hope you will too. Okay.
Just planning to stay till she gets back.
I'm going to unlock the front door if it's locked so you can open it if she wants to leave. He couldn't find his key one day and he had to call a neighbor to come and
I've got my key right now.
Key? Well, yes. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, let's go back to Henry Louis Smith. I'd like to hear more about him.
Well, he was from North Carolina, and I thought he was the greatest speaker I ever heard, you know, the greatest speaker anywhere. I remember his graduation address for high school, and I remember other men's addresses that I heard last week. Well, I'd have to say this. I'd never had much contact with anyone of his stature. We had some mighty good people in Bedford, but of his stature. And I have often said, and for many years, he was the greatest person I knew. And I don't know how I happened to get a beta bid, but I have flattered myself of late to think that it may be that Dr. Henry Louis put it up to his son Dupuy, who was a beta. And I got a beta bid. In fact, I didn't know anything about fraternities when I went there. I was really unsophisticated.
So tell me what fraternities were like back then.
Well, I think they had regular meetings. Many of them had fraternity houses. Sigma Chi House is still on the corner of Washington Street and if they didn't own a house, they rented it. And they encouraged our people to take part in activities, and if you've got to be anything on the campus of any importance, they put what they wanted. I think, frankly, and there's simple prejudice, I think Baylor perhaps put more emphasis on the worthwhile things than some of the other fraternities did. Now, you can write that down to my prejudice as Baylor, but and I have an idea. I've never said this to anybody, and I never have thought about it until recent years. I have an idea that Dr. Henry Lewis Smith was kind enough to suggest to his son Dupuy that Baylor's give me a bid. And in spite of the fact that he'd heard my graduation address. And the first position I had in the world when I graduated was given me by Dr. Henry Lewis Smith, and I traveled throughout the South in the interest of raising funds for the reestablishment of the Robert E. Lee School of Journalism.
Really?
On Washington Lee campus, yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, that was Dr. Smith's dream. I am embarrassed that I can't tell you more about that. I don't know that that ever took place. I'm sorry to say that. Shame to say it. But it hadn't taken place for a long time. And Dr. Smith didn't have universal agreement with his policies. And but that's all I can say about it.
Well, now, another person, did you stay in touch with Washington and Lee through the years?
Yes.
Because I'm intrigued that you're talking about Henry Lewis Smith as being such a wonderful orator.
Yes.
Because a lot of other, now you're the only person I've talked to who was in school during the Smith administration.
Yes.
Now so many other
Francis
people
Gaines.
Talk about Francis Pendleton Gaines. You are the only person who can compare them.
Well, Francis Gaines was an orator with magnificent command of English language. Henry Lewis Smith, before I met Gaines, I would have put at the top of, but that was the limited experience, maybe, of a Bedford High School graduate. Henry Lewis Smith was very, very interesting, and he did now his, he talked about leadership in his graduation address, and he made a great point of the difference between being a boxcar and an engine. And what we ought to be are engines instead of boxcars being pulled around by something else. Well, that was simple enough for a college student to understand. And I still remember it today. Now, am I talking too much?
You're doing just wonderfully. Well, you know, that is such an interesting point, because I've spent the last year trying to understand what makes Washington and Lee, Washington and Lee.
Yes.
You know, why it is such an extraordinary place. And I think that's one of the things that I've learned, is that it produces engines.
It what?
It produces engines.
Yes. Yeah, very good. Well, oh my.
Do you need to get that?
Don't you think I can let that pass?
I think you can. I'm here.
All right. That's probably somebody wants to sell me something.
You're probably right. You're probably right. So, how do they do that? How does Washington and Lee inspire leaders?
Well, I will say this, and this may sound arrogant. I think Washington and Lee is fortunate in that a high proportion of its students come from families where you could expect some degree of leadership. You see, particularly the tradition of Robert E. Lee. Lee was a great person. Where'd you originate?
In Maryland.
Huh?
In Maryland.
Maryland. Well, that's pretty close to Virginia. but that is the that was the Washington and Lee tradition. George Washington and Robert E. Lee, that's pretty good then. Now maybe you say you wouldn't want to have two military persons in the leadership, but I think these were exceptional military persons. Lee was a strongly religious man. I won't say that Washington wasn't. I don't know just how strong Washington's religion was. And I'm going to talk about religion later on. I've got something to say about that. Don't let me forget.
I'm writing it down.
Well, I don't think I'm doing much.
Well, now, one of the things that I think we all associate with Robert E. Lee is the concept of the honor system.
Of course.
Tell me how you learned about the honor system and what it meant to you as a student.
Well, everybody learned about the honor system. We were told about it. And it was understood that that was a principle of Washington and Lee. You took an examination, you didn't cheat. And that's the way it came. It was one of the major emphases. And that, I think, is one thing that differentiates Washington and Lee from the typical state university, for instance. Some of my prejudices may come out in this conversation. But the fact that you could associate the honor system with Robert E. Lee meant a good bit. Now, of course, we had students from all over the country. I don't know what proportion were from the South when I was there, but I don't think anyone coming in there without knowing about it would think, well, now this is a Southern institution, because we were a national institution. There wasn't any any emphasis at Washington and Lee on being Southern. There was emphasis on George Washington and on Robert E. Lee. I'm going to deviate here and tell you something I thought might interest you.
Please.
Have you ever heard of Karl Barth?
No. What's the name?
Karth, Varth, Switzerland. He would be recognized as maybe being the greatest theologian of this generation. I spent a year in Switzerland, here listening to Bach, and had seen him. Then so when he came to this country and spent about a week here in Richmond with Union Seminary. Well, it fell to me to squire Karl Barth around, and I had that was a great distinction. But some interesting things happened. But Barth was very much interested in military affairs. When we took Barth out to the banks of the Chickahominy River here to show him where one of the Civil War skirmishes had taken place, and the local authority was telling Barth about it, Barth corrected him at one point. He knew about it. Now, I'm afraid I've gotten started on something I don't want to tell too long, but of course, was a great experience for me to, in a sense, squire Barth around the state of Virginia. He was interested primarily in the military folks and other things in our great state that didn't primarily appeal to him. But we wanted, as I said, I was given charge of his program. So where would we go? Well, we went of course to Appomattox, and other places I don't especially recall now, but there. And after we'd gone to Appomattox and I'd seen how interested he was in history, it just occurred to me, well, why not take him to Lexington, where both George Washington and Robert E. Lee were buried? And so I proposed that to Barth, and he said, I'm not interested in where men are buried, I'm interested in where they fought.
Ah.
How about that from a theologian?
That's fascinating. That's fascinating. Well, now, you talk about going to Lexington. I'm interested in what the town of Lexington was like when you were a student. Can you describe the town for me?
Well, I think so. The town of Bedford had about 3,000 population. Lexington was a bit smaller, I think, than Bedford. And I recall being taken over there by my mother. Well, now, Uncle Charlie was teaching law at the University of Virginia at that time, so I didn't see him in Lexington. I'll quote to you. You know, does the name John W. Davis mean anything to you?
Yes.
Well, he's Washington and Lee.
Yes.
And he had been a student under Charles Graves, my uncle, and he met me. Well, that gave me some standing with him. He said that Charles Graves knows more railroad law than anybody in the United States. Well, when he said that, the railroads were the thing. The airplanes were just maybe remotely coming in. And So of course that pleased me, to hear him say that. Now, you asked what Lexington was like. Well, Lexington was a Presbyterian town and was a religious town, but that doesn't mean that there weren't a lot of things going on in Lexington that wouldn't be very compatible with the best Christian church. There were a great many good people in Lexington, and I don't mean goody good, I mean good people. And it was good to... there were certain families that for one reason or another I have a contact with, I guess through my home, the Phoenix family. He was the head of the finances of the university, Paul Phoenix. And they were Washington people. And, there were good, but many others. Satisfactory on this question.
One thing that I think, if I remember from my research, when you drove into Lexington, were the roads paved at that point?
Oh no, they. I suppose when I drove into Lexington, yes, they were paved in a good many places, but not everywhere. And I remember the good old days when we drove on dirt roads. My father was a hardware man. He had a hardware store in Bedford. But he also had a large farm right on the outskirts of Bedford. And he believed that in making his boys work. So I did my stint on the farm, plowing, cutting corn, shocking wheat, everything was to be done, and finally then driving a tractor on the farm. And I liked it. To me it was a valued experience that I had. Now, there are so many Yankees who've moved in to that area and bought some of our farm, so that my sister-in-law, who grew up in Lynchburg but still lives in Bedford, she speaks of it as South Manhattan. There are so many Yankees around. Now, ask me again what you asked.
Well, I was looking for a description of the town of Lexington. Was the Robert E. Lee Hotel open yet?
The Robert E. Lee was not open.
I think that was just after you were there.
But it may have been open before I left.
It was somewhere around in there, yes, but I'm not sure about the exact date.
The Robert E. Lee Hotel is not a historic Lexington building by any means. Of course, you've got Robert E. Lee's house on the Washington and Lee campus, where the president of Washington lives. By the way, the president and his wife paid a call on us recently, and we let them in through the kitchen. We've got a driveway out right behind, and that's where a lot of people come. They get off, then instead of walking around the grass, they come in the front. we've Well, they're coming through the kitchen, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So I've enjoyed saying that I welcome the President of Washington, Lee, and welcomed him through my kitchen.
Well, he told me he had a marvelous time visiting you.
He did?
He did.
Well, I think he'd have a marvelous time visiting almost anybody. I don't know him. I haven't seen him personally a great deal, but perfectly obvious that he is a gentleman through and through and kindly, and I hope he's got enough force about him to stand for the right thing. One thing I will speak about later on. Well, now I've been wandering around.
Go right ahead, wherever you want. It's fine.
Well, you asked me about Lexington. I think that's about all I.
Okay. All right.
It's a lovely, lovely town. It's a good atmosphere for a university. But actually, Lexington in my day didn't play any particular role in the Washington and Lee program.
Now, did you live at Annie Jo White's the whole time you were there? Did you live at Annie Jo White's house?
I did for a while, yes. But I didn't live there. I lived next door, which was occupied by the Moffats. He was an English professor. The Betas didn't necessarily live at Anna Jo's house. I think maybe occasionally, you know, you might have had one there. Down there on Lane Street, at the south side of the campus, next to Anna Jo's was Dr. Deshaies. He's chemistry. Residents.
Now, how about teachers? Were there any particular faculty members who were very important to you? I'm going to flip the tape over before you answer that.